Blog Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar. Blog Talk Radio's finest. Not so mad science on Black Hole Radio.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to tonight's edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, and as always, coming to you live from the city of Detroit, Motown. And just because Berry Gordy took Motown to L.A. does not mean Detroit has lost its soul. Tonight's program is a shift from the traditional to the macabre, the strange and insane. When we look at the context of today's world, such as it is, we must begin to consider. And this consideration should be looked at from the framework of these words from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and repeated by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan as a reminder to us. We cannot fathom the depth of Satan's madness in today's world. We've been warned to watch the weather. We've been told to produce our own food, secure viable means to have access to true fresh water, untainted and poisoned, to use readily available mechanisms to ensure the purity of our water. We are not living in what is believed to be a post-apocalyptic world, but we have post-apocalyptic type circumstances swirling about us. Back in October of 2011, a man by the name of Adam Hadhazy, H-A-D-H-A-Z-Y, Adam Hadhazy, he penned an article in Live Science magazine titled, "Eat the Old, Could Mass Cannibalism Solve a Future Food Shortage?" Question mark. We have learned. When they begin to ask these questions of themselves, it is not beyond the reasonable assumption, or presumption in this case, that they have not seriously begun to look at such a potentiality or possibility, or have done so and just haven't said anything. Again, back in October of 2011, the global human population was believed to be approaching or somewhere on the plus side of 7 billion people. And it was expected at the end, or is expected at the end of the century, the population globally would be 10 billion, according to a United Nations report. That is a lot of mouths to feed because of the systemic overuse of pesticides and the emergence of genetically modified foods, there's still a very good chance that generating food from traditional and healthier farming techniques and livestock practices, there would not be able to keep pace with the boom of growth. So he asked the question, what if a worldwide food shortage were to become so terrible and dire that people resorted to eating people? He did not ask this question out of a vacuum. Those powers that be then, that are powers now, are still asking that same question and have all arrived at the response of, we must depopulate the world. But they're not talking about depopulating the world across the board. They're talking about depopulating the darker people of the planet. Let's be real. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and others like them are not operating in the European theater. They are operating in the so-called third world countries of Africa. So, in such a dreadful event, the most sensible first choice for a meal, should they or the world devolve and eating people becomes sacrosanct, the first choice for these meals would become the weak or the elderly. After all, a fifth of the supposed 10 billion human beings on the planet at the end of the century would be at least 65 years or older and less physically able than the rest to contribute, based on this viewpoint, to what remains of society. So mercifully, researchers say that feeding on the old, or really anyone, if you look at the science for truly what it is, eating people would not solve world hunger. Their projections are that in the short term, eating people might satisfy the gruesome dilemma of how to feed the population and lower it at the same time. Thus, this language seems to me that they've considered it and projected how many people would need to be eaten over a period of time for society to survive until a new process of food sources can be found. But cannibalism on a global scale, on a national scale, on a local scale, beyond the immorality of it, could never work short term or long term. To quote James Cole of the University of Southampton's Center for Archaeology of Human Origins, he says, if everyone is eating each other, the species won't last very long. He says, part of the problem is that human beings are just not very meaty compared with cows, pigs, deer, and other animals.
Go get it, HD. Turn the light on.
Even if social conventions broke down to such a catastrophic extent that they began eating each other wholesale. Human beings are simply not that nutritionally viable when compared to other mammals, to quote Mr. Cole. Science fiction, on one hand, has taken a stab at what institutionalized cannibalizing of the elderly might look like. It was back in 1973 that the movie Soylent Green, which I'm going to mention quite a few more times as we go on this evening, which was a powerful corporation, peddled rations of the eponymous food flakes. This miracle food stuff is advertised as algae, but turns out to be not true. Instead, human beings who die are being processed into these colored wafers. As a police detective played by Mr. Charleston Heston, right-wing radical, he memorably screams out near the end of the movie upon learning what the unsavory truth is about Soylent Green. He yelled, "Soylent Green is people." In reality, according to Mr. Cole, members of the species Homo sapiens and its ancestry have long devoured one another, both for basic survival and ritualistic reasons. Here, Mr. Cole and I begin to differ in terms of what cannibalism is and how it began. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, we take Mr. Cole's, the anthropologist, archaeologist's point of view for the moment. Cannibalism seems to have a long tradition within the human species. But save for a few instances, cannibalism has most likely or mostly a delicacy or tied to an important cultural event rather than a consistent source of nutrients. This is where he and I do agree. We can accept that the Aztecs did not eat human flesh, but as part of their ritual practices, believe that if you ate the heart of your enemy, you'd gain their power. This has been a consistent ritualization of cannibalism throughout the eons amongst certain tribal groups. It is not a pattern of behavior where killing someone and then eating them was how they sought nutrition. Cut marks found on bones on hominid bones suggest, according to their archaeological record, that the ancestry of man engaged in meat removal as far back as 780,000 years ago. However, it is pure conjecture from my study that this was done for food sustenance. We don't know why these people were cut up. It may have been war. We don't know. All we know is that these cut marks exist. There have been many historical cultures that have dabbled in cannibalistic processes. We mentioned the Aztecs, who butchered their enemies and in many cases consumed their heart to gain their spiritual power. The Moai in New Zealand did the same. In the present day, in 2011, there were tribes in the Amazon and in Papua New Guinea that practiced a degree of cannibalism for those that they vanquished. However, in today's modern context, the wickedly wise scientists of today's world are speaking in terms of the Soylent Green methodology. If there was, according to Mr. Cole, a deliberate selection process, though it may not be visible to us today, it would appear that a range of individuals from infants, adolescents, to adults could be and were being cannibalized. Supposing that trend changes and a desperate starving populace figures it's time to cull the herd, as the Gates Foundation and others like them have decided, of a couple billion elderly human beings, how would the predator fare? They say at the outset, bellies would be full. The Cole says it is his guess that while steady state nutritional cannibalism doesn't work well, man grows too slowly compared to chickens or herbivorous domesticated mammals. As an outset to excessive growth, it clearly would not pass or would pass muster, according to Stephen Vogel, a biologist at Duke University. But only for so long, based on the numbers from Mr. Vogel's book, Prime Mover, A Natural History of Muscle, a book published by W.W. Norton and Company, 2002. They've looked at this so thoroughly scientifically. They can tell you that the human body on average can provide around 45 pounds of slightly fatty meat and other edible parts. An all-meat diet, if organs are consumed as well, can supply all the body nutrients as demonstrated by Eskimos. This is not true. Eskimos chew fatty tissue for a different reason and purpose in the consumption of whale blubber, walrus fat, seal fat. But the victuals, or the body itself, translates into about 60,000 kilocalories. Human beings need up to, believe me, they put their minds into looking at this. The human being needs 2,000 to 3,000 kilocalories a day for sustenance. Just so you know, because I'm saying kilocalories, the calorie counts listed on all nutritional labels are actually kilocalories. They don't use the word kilo, they just say calories. So assuming there was barely enough chopped up man meat to go around, and the cannibals were getting only 10% sustenance per day based on a 3,000 kilocalorie diet, a single person could provide 200 days of sustenance to the person who eats them. I repeat it again. We cannot fathom the mind of Satan. They've thought about this. Even so, Mr. Vogel writes, a population would have to sacrifice nearly 2 of its adults each year for it to survive, or for its surviving members. That means the population would decline by almost an unthinkable 2/3 each year. They've done their homework. They've done the math. And even allowing that foods such as grains and fruits were still available, and human meat just took the place of other animal meat, a group population would nevertheless drop by around 1/3 annually. However, check this out. The showstopper, as they put it, is that natural reproduction, sex, followed by a 9-month pregnancy, can grow a population by only 3-4% per year at best. So while going cannibal might seem to be a hearty good option at first, feast would soon turn to famine. The punishment of a divine and just God for the deviation. We would effectively select ourselves out of existence. But not ourselves, their selves. As supply would never keep up with the demand. Beyond the squeamishness of eating human flesh and a potential sense of guilt over a murder, a more serious problem looms for cannibalism, something called prion or prion diseases. Prions are misfolded proteins that induce other proteins to take on the wrong shape, causing neurological dysfunction. A familiar example of this would be the Creutzfeldt-Jakob or Jakob disease, which is derived from the bovine prion that triggers mad cow disease. But is there another way that this happens? It's called a father having a child with his daughter, a mother having a child with her son, intermixing and intermingling of family, all within one another, without the diversification of the gene pool. It takes a sick mind to think this way, but at a time in the Eurocentric part of history, trapped on the other side of the Caucasus Mountains, where this cannibalism and wholesale intermingling within families was done. And it was the norm. Last century, the so-called human cannibals in Papua New Guinea, and particularly women and children who ate dead relatives, prion-loaded brains, came down with a prion disease called Kuru. Stopping the cannibalism squashed the lethal ailment. So for those who believe cannibalism is fine, you would be literally eating yourselves mad. The prospect of rampant cannibalism seems extremely unlikely. Really? I don't think so. Too much time and effort was put into developing the math to look at the science or the potentiality of cannibalizing one another. There has yet to be, as the writer of this article says, Luthian crisis or a Malthusian crisis, named after an English scholar called Thomas Malthus, who in 1798 penned the idea that humankind could outstrip its food production, even as the world's population has quadrupled since 1900. Yet ramping up food production while preserving the environment will be a major challenge, especially with the added X factor of climate change. To quote Ken Kassman, a professor of agronomy at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, he writes, "We have grossly underestimated the magnitude of the challenge to both feed a world with 9 to 10 billion people and also protect environmental quality and natural resources. The appropriate investment in research, education, and infrastructure and markets worldwide," Mr. Kassman says, "I have no question it will be possible to achieve food security and ecological integrity of our planet." What are we faced with today? We are faced with global warming. We are faced with food shortages. And we are faced with a psychotic and psychosis-laden population in its leadership, that the very thing that they're saying shouldn't be done, they have actually done the math to find out if it could be done. So according to Mr. Cole, in other words, our future grandchildren probably don't need to worry about having to eat us or become cannibal child themselves. He says, "It seems to me," and I quote, "that such a survival strategy can clearly never work. Then why did you do the math to find out?" We're not done with this subject tonight. Well, this is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once and again, and as always, coming to you live from the city of Detroit. We are going to take a short 5-minute break, and we're going to come right back with this subject matter of cannibalism in the modern era. So, whom shall we depart with? Ah, the Sister Queen herself, because we're going to need a bridge over these troubled waters. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. In our discussion this evening, and I truly say our discussion, for those who like to call in and ask a question, the number is 563-999-3089. Just hit that one so that we can see your hand raised, and we'll give you the floor to ask your questions, and we will endeavor to answer your question as succinctly and as thoroughly as possible. Again, that number is 563-999-3089, and hit the one, and the floor will certainly be yours. Now, back in 1973, the movie Soylent Green was released. Soylent Green imagined a dystopian nightmare society. But if you look at things today, that is a version of 2022. Where overpopulation and climate disaster had made the earth virtually unlivable. Our food isn't even really food. A genetically modified foodstuff that does not carry the nutrient impact that the human being needs to survive. Climate disaster is present all over. Earthquakes in diverse places around the world. The Ring of Fire is active. Desertification of once lush fields are now unable to produce greenery. The water, in many cases, has become undrinkable. Resource and housing shortages have exacerbated class stratification, with the wealthy or those who can afford it living lushly in reinforced housing. People are living in damn near a bomb shelter just made to look very good, while everybody else is scrounging just to get through the day to day, never knowing what they're going to wake up to the next morning. This is not a movie from 1973 called Soylent Green, but this is today, February 22nd, 2022, with not enough to eat. Half of the world's population is sustained only by a staple food source created and sold by a corporation called Soylent. Comes in various colors, the best of which is supposed to be the titular Soylent Green. This fictitious company builds their new green variety as the more nutritious, having been manufactured by oceanic plankton and seaweed. But come the end of the movie, we find the truth that Soylent Green is people. This film is a stark commentary about the dangers of environmental destruction and social devaluation, and the length at which some corporations, now let's just call things as they are, it is verifiably factual that the vaccines and its derivative boosters don't work. But they're being pumped into you because it makes them money. The pharmaceutical industries are in the business of making money. Your health is irrelevant. And the dangers to your health. It is easier to pay the fine than to not kill you. This isn't silent Soylent Green from 1973. This is February 22nd, 2022. But the length to which some corporations will go to maintain their profits is evident. Now that we're actually in 2022, the world has seen an increase in what is called novelty foods, including one supposed meal replacement shake named after the famed movie. They actually came out with a product called Soylent Green. So the question you have to ask yourself, could they really make Soylent? And could people be fooled to believing that they will want it to be done? Supposing, of course, we decided we wanted to transform our lost loved ones into food. The science, the technology exists today for it to be done. As we said earlier, they've already done the math. They've looked at the cost, the cause and effect of eating people over time and the dangers it involves. So the infrastructure to do this insanity already exists. After all, human beings are just meat, no different from any other animal at the end of the day. Not as much muscle mass or fat, but it's there. Well, let's look how easy this is to do. The easiest way to do it, but the least palatable, particularly if you're trying to hide what you're doing, as was the case in the movie, would be to treat the human beings, the people, the way we treat livestock today. And when I say we, I don't mean me, I don't mean you, and I don't mean us. That we is a them in a circle that none of us travel in. It would be simple to establish a butchering process. Package the cut meat, put it on the shelf. Job well done, Joe the Butcher. But I would suspect that if they're going to eat people, will want illusion at the very least that we're eating something else. So what are the other options? And believe me, they looked at it already. Soylent Green, the movie, even in 1973, did not come out of a vacuum. They plan things 25 to 30 years, sometimes 50 years in advance. Then when they reach the milestone, they revisit it and plan again for the next 25, 35, and 50-year period. We're in the time frame. If you've ever looked at a food seasoning packet, you'll notice when you read it, that it lists chicken, beef, pork, or other meats as an ingredient. Yet when you look inside it, all you find is powder. As the commercial went, where's the beef? It's in the powder. And if we want to make a human biscuit, that's probably the way they would do it. Turn the human flesh into a powder. Meat powders are fairly simple to produce with today's chemistry. Typically, the skin and the bones of your chosen animal are removed. Though in a pinch, that may not necessarily be necessary to do, because that can be turned into a powder too. They will send the body through a process of dehydration over a low temperature for an extended period of time. This is the science of dehydrating food. The aim and the idea is to remove as much moisture as possible. Finally, what's left, the meat is ground into a powder and sifted like wheat to remove any chunks that were missed. The science to turn the human body into a powder, a consumable good, exists today, and you or I wouldn't even know it. Why is it that these corporations had to be taken to court and forced to list the ingredients that they place in items? And even still today, they get fined for not doing what the law required them to do. They may be sneaking it into the food products as it is anyway. So at this point, we're Soylent people. Are unrecognizable and ready to be baked into crackers or used as a base for soup. Possibilities of this chemical process are endless. I'll repeat the words of that most perfect teacher, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. We cannot fathom the depth of the mind of Satan. Nutritionally, sure. Human bodies are made of the same sorts of things as other animals. You can get protein and fat, albeit a different distribution than other animals. All things being equal, as we said before, human meat is a perfectly efficient way of calorie exchange. Certainly, other animals have done it throughout our history. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending upon your outlook, and what side of the fence you stand on with this monster that we live with, depending upon if you are being eaten or doing the eating, things are not equal, brothers and sisters. Animal meat, produced at a factory farm, undergoes all sorts of precautions in order for it to prevent the transmission of diseases to the people and persons consuming it. Again, heed the words of that wise teacher. Grow your own food. Raise your own livestock. Don't say you can't do it or it can't be done, because it can. That's what a community of people is for. Livestock animals are given a host of antibiotics to go through throughout their lives, and the presence of disease is usually the cause for that individual animal to be discarded. Even still, factory farms still present a significant disease risk. If we were eating people as sick as we are mentally, physically, and spiritually today, ordinary people, there's little guarantee that those same precautions to prevent disease would be present. Moreover, there are comparatively few diseases which jump species from animals to humans. Every disease a person has will, or rather I should say, necessarily infects other people. So if you pulverize and powderize someone who has AIDS and you consume that person, you got it. They got leukemia. You ate it. You got it. Whatever's on the shelf, you got it too. Of course, supposedly, properly cooking or preparing our Soylent would eliminate a significant number of those diseases, but not all of them. As we have learned now in the age of COVID, it is a very resilient virus. Just when they think they got that puppy cornered, it mutates and it becomes a different strain. Give an example. Mad cow disease. They thought they had it stamped out. Not so. Mad cow disease to the present day occasionally prompts the recall of tainted meat. The disease, as I stated earlier, is caused by something called prions or prions, P-R-I-O-N-S, which cause proteins in the brain to fold irregularly. Prions don't respond to temperature. The temperature at which meat is normally cooked. As with swine flesh, in order to fully denature the prions or the diseases of swine flesh, it has to be heated to a temperature of 1,000 degrees Celsius or more to kill the indigent diseases in it. Anything cooked at that temperature is burnt so damn severely you can't eat it no friggin' way. Similarly, prion diseases exist in the human being and are documented to have been transmitted through cannibalism, creating a system in which half the human population get most of their food from human remains might be a highly efficient way to end the human species altogether. So as I stated earlier, let us suppose we solve all those problems. A robust marketing campaign, as with COVID, has convinced humanity eating the disease, or rather I should say the deceased, is not only acceptable but noble. And we discovered ways to effectively rid the meat of dangerous pathogens. So I guess the idea of being a vegetarian is beyond the ability of people to do. They must have their meat. every living person gets to eat one dead person. Then they themselves are eaten. You create a sort of a horrible perpetual motion machine of consumption in which no energy is ever lost. The average human being, let's say of about 136 pounds, and the average adult in America today eats roughly 525 pounds of food every year. Even if you are eating everything, the organs, the bones, the whole shebang, a person would only provide about a quarter of the foodstuff you need for a single year. I'm not pulling these numbers out of my vacuum. They've done the work, the math, to see the viability of this insanity. Moreover, the birth and the death rates don't line up. Do you know that last year alone, it is estimated that roughly 140 million people were born, while only 60 million people died? And that was during the disease pandemic. Not only is the prospect of turning people into crackers despicable, immoral, and sadistic, it is also dangerous. It is what Wall Street would call a bad business model. To that end, this is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Hang with me for about 2 minutes while I take a quick break with another song from our illustrious sister queen, Aretha Franklin. 2 minutes and 49 seconds, and we'll be right back with some serious COVID updates.
Looking out on the morning rain, I used to feel so uninspired, and when I knew I had to face another day, thought it
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. So as not to keep jumping with both feet on someone's neck into that proverbial hole called stupidity and ignorance, of which we all have lived at one time or another, a hole that a lot of us fall back into and climb out of over time, I'm going to share some information this evening with respect to COVID that I hope you take to heart. In an article published by the New York Times, for more than a year, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention has collected data on the hospitalizations for COVID-19 here in the United States, and they broke it down by age, race, and vaccination status. But it has not made most of that information public. You say, well, Brother Harold, where do you get this information you share? I know where to look. And that is the purpose of this program. For those who don't know where to look or what they're looking at, I know where to go find it, extract it, and share it so that you know it as well. When the CDC published the first significant data 2 weeks ago on the effectiveness of the boosters in adults younger than 65, it left out the numbers for a huge portion of that population, 18 to 49 year olds. The group the data showed was least likely to benefit from extra booster shots because the first two doses already left them well protected, so they said. We are 2 full years into the pandemic. The agency leading the country's response to the public health emergency has published only a tiny fraction of the data it has collected. This is according to the information received from several people who are familiar with the data collected. What are they hiding and why are they lying? The vaccine don't work. The booster don't work. But they got to keep pushing it out there for the money it attracts. John Weary. I'm going to spell his last name is W-H-E-R-R-Y. John Weary, director of the Institute for Immunology at the University of Pennsylvania, told the New York Times that scientists are starting to see diminishing returns to the number of additional doses, noting that a fourth vaccination may be as unnecessary as a third vaccination to protect against death and serious illness for the average adult. The New York Times also cited at least 4 studies that found that the immune system, using specialized T cells produced by the vaccines or after an infection, is capable of remembering and attacking the virus after several months and may even be able to do so for many years. Let's stop right there. This body, this machine, unique machine in nature, is self-defending. The immune system is a two-step process. An innate system, which we are born with to protect us from disease and outside influences, and an active immune system that the body develops as it matures. This body, once exposed to an antigen or a pathogen, giving it enough time will produce the means by which it needs to protect itself from that pathogen ad infinitum. The machine is built perfect yet imperfect because we do not treat it right. But if we treat it right, feed it right, and think it right, it will protect itself. It is not impossible to imagine this outcome, since scientists have already observed this exact response in individuals infected with the SARS coronavirus. In the case of SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, a study found that individuals exposed to the virus during the 2003 outbreak still carried T cells that could remember and target the virus more than 17 years later. Health officials who are not hindered by the money flow from the pharmaceutical companies know this to be also true with the case called COVID-19. In the Associated Press, the average daily COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations are continuing to fall in the U.S., an indicator that the Omicron variant's hold is weakening across the country. There is another variant out there that is beginning to pick up speed that mass media has not yet brought to the minds of the American people. They are saying in New York, the number of cases went down by more than 50% over the last 2 weeks. That's what they're willing to report. But that isn't necessarily true. The CDC is still promoting a fourth COVID shot for a product that has proven to be ineffective. As the world approaches the second anniversary of the declaration of the existence of a COVID-19 pandemic by the World Health Organization on March 11, more nations are rolling out or are discussing the possibility of four doses of the coronavirus vaccine for what they consider to be their most vulnerable citizens. In the United States, the leading public health officials say they are very carefully monitoring if or when the fourth dose might be needed. FDA spokesperson Allison Hunt confirmed that although Dr. Peter Marks, the director of the FDA Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research, has noted that there is still much uncertainty as to show how the pandemic may further evolve. He also said, and has said, it is possible that a fourth dose might be recommended as we move into the fall. We have been lied to, brothers and sisters. We've been had. We've been hoodwinked. How much more are you willing to endure before you begin to understand and hear the word of the trumpeter? Keep that damnable vaccine out of your veins. Learn to eat to live. Don't be so willing to take the word of the interloper before you begin to expose yourself and put your mind into protecting yourself. We all don't know everything, but we do have ears, and we have the capacity to learn, to grow, and to understand, to know what is best and in our own best interest. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Be it the will of God and Allah. I will be back next week, next Tuesday from 6:30. Hopefully, I will have a couple of guests on, one from the CDC and one from the New York City Department of Health, to speak into the unnecessary exposure to COVID that we've been presented with. So to that end, I bid you all a fond adieu, and I leave you with the words of that immortal Black Baptist preacher from the Abyssinian Baptist Church in the city of New York, the late, great Adam Clayton Powell. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith. Because the God is on the scene today. Assalamu alaikum.